Good morning, everyone. I'm very glad to be here this morning. I'm currently, probably most of you don't know that I'm currently on a trip from Ontario, Canada to Florida. And I flew to Boston, and then we took a bus to Long Island, where I've been staying the past couple of days with Nanda Hamdru. But New Jersey wasn't on the schedule, on the itinerary. So this is a surprise trip, an impromptu stop. Today we'll be heading on to Washington, where I'm set to teach for a couple of days before heading further south. So on top of having the nice surprise of being able to visit this wonderful Buddhist institution, it also happens to be the celebration of Poson and, of course, Father's Day. Poson, I guess, most of you know what it refers to, but I think it's maybe a little bit apt for this situation, this occasion where we all find ourselves here. First of all, for myself, not of course to in any way compare myself to the Arahat Mahinda, but in the same vein, the idea of spreading the Dhamma, bringing the Buddha's Dhamma, the Saddhamma, to a new place is kind of exciting. I remember arriving in Sri Lanka on Poson, and you have got the same kind of feeling, but here in America, the feeling of the idea behind Poson as being the time of bringing the Buddha Sasana to a new place is quite exciting. So here we are. This is a lot like Sri Lanka would have been back in the day when Buddhism first arrived. And the Buddha's teaching was first brought to the Sri Lanka, the Sinhalese people. Now here we have a chance to bring Buddhism to America. And so this vihara is an example of that, bringing Buddhism to a new land. And it's exciting on this trip to see how much has been accomplished already to bring Buddhism to America. So it no longer is a land without the Buddha's teaching. Much of Buddhism has already been spread to the people here. And there are many people of all parts of Europe and North America practicing the Buddha's teaching. So I'm delighted to be able to have this opportunity to do my part to share the Dhamma and to remind us all as a group of the things that we are trying to achieve. My teacher, my preceptor in Thailand, he used to liken bringing Buddhism to a foreign land as like putting a diamond in a golden ring. Because especially with a land like America, it prides itself on being abundant in resources, good things. It's a beautiful and well-kept and industrialized country that has so much to offer. So there's no need to disparage any of that. There's a great material wealth in this country. That's like the gold ring. So we're not here to disparage that or to minimize the greatness of whatever of the countries that we bring Buddhism to or the good things that are already there. We just want, we have something to add, something that's missing. Because no matter how great your material wealth is, the wealth of the Dhamma, the wealth of the truth that the Buddha found for himself and shared with the people of the world, is still always something you can add on top of it. Still something extra that stands out and adds to the beauty. In this case, adds to the beauty that is this great country. So this morning I'm going to talk about the Dhamma and actually hopefully lead you in a little bit of meditation. Because the Dhamma of the Buddha, the Saddhamma, is of three kinds. There's the Pariyatti Saddhamma, Patipatti Saddhamma, and Pativeda Saddhamma. All of these three together constitute the Saddhamma, the good teachings of the Buddha. Pariyatti Saddhamma is what we're most familiar with. It's the study. Unfortunately, many people only get so far as to study the Buddha's teaching. Here in America, the most common means of approaching Buddhism is through study, through books, or through writings on the internet. Nowadays you can buy or download most of the Buddha's teachings in English. Much of it's available for free and very easy to find. Of course, in Sri Lanka it's even easier. You have banna every day, and you have books, and you have on the radio, constantly learning more about the Dhamma, discussions and Sunday school, Dhammasa. It's very easy to gain a knowledge of the Buddha's teaching. This is called Pariyatti Saddhamma. Pariyatti Saddhamma is like a map. It's like reading a map. If you study the map, then you know all the various places on the map. You know all the paths that lead to all the various places, and if you memorize it, then you have a very good idea of where to go not to get lost. But the map itself, even reading the map itself, doesn't tell you which way to go. So you can still get lost. You can still get lost because you don't know which way you need to go. You look at the map and you think, oh, well, maybe I'll go to New Jersey. Or maybe I'll go to New York, or maybe I'll go to California. The map will not tell you. It's missing something. The map itself is only giving you information. So when you read the Buddha's teaching or look at the Buddha's teaching, it's like eating, when monks eat, And sometimes they put out all sorts of dishes for the monks to eat. And you don't really know which one to eat. There's too much. So you just take some of everything. Buddhism is kind of like that. There's so much that sometimes you don't know where to start. You see all these good things that the Buddha taught. Some he taught to these people, some he taught to those people, and you don't know which ones to take for yourself. Maybe you read this portion of the Buddha's teaching and so you get an idea that Buddhism is like that. If you read this portion of the Buddha's teaching, you get the idea that it's like this. Like these blind men and the elephant. You know the story? The king, he wanted to have some fun, so he asked these blind men to touch this elephant and tell him what an elephant was like. And so one of the men touched the elephant's tail, And he grabbed the elephant's tail and he came back and he said, an elephant is like a broom. Another one reaching up and touched the elephant's ear. And he said, an elephant is like the winnowing fan or something, or something big, like a dinner plate or something. Another one went and touched the tusk and he said, oh, it's like a spear or so on. Another one touched the leg and said, it's like the trunk of a tree. And though they couldn't, they all argued. They ended up arguing over what an elephant was like. That happens sometimes in Buddhism. You ever find Buddhists arguing because they've read pieces of it? You even find people arguing because they've read all about it and they know everything. They know everything, but they know nothing. Buddhism is not for arguing. If you're arguing about Buddhism, you're missing something. What did the Buddha say? He said, those who know we have to die will put down their quarrels, will give up their quarrels. So if you're still quarreling over Buddhism, you've got a problem. And this is pariyatti. It doesn't actually teach you anything. It gives you the information you need to learn. But if you don't walk, if you don't follow the teachings, you can never really learn the truth of it. Like morality is like that. Everyone here took 8 precepts. Well, 5 is already a great start, but already a great thing, not a great start. Keeping 5 precepts is a great thing, but you can go your whole life keeping the 5 precepts and never really know why. Never really understand why. Sometimes I ask children, why do you keep the 5 precepts? They can give me some answer or maybe not give me some answer, but they don't really understand. There's no deep understanding of why they're keeping the precepts. Adults actually are the same. You can tell me exactly why the Buddha said we should keep the precepts. But the Buddha wasn't parroting what his teacher said. The Buddha knew. He knew that it was wrong to kill. He could never bring himself to kill, even if someone told him it was right. It's the difference between pariyatti and patipatti. Pariyatti is the study. So, this morning we don't have much time to study. But that's okay, because pariyatti is just the way that you have to go. So if I tell you, I can cheat and I can say, don't worry about the map, I'll tell you which way to go. You go this way. And so we can streamline it. Because in Buddhism there are 2 ways of study. One is in order from beginning to end. If you really want to study, the best way is to study the Vinaya, the Sutta, the Abhidhamma, all of the Digha Nikaya, Majjhima Nikaya, Sanyutta Nikaya, Anguttara Nikaya, Kutaka Nikaya, the Dhamma Sangini, the Vibhanga, you have to read all of these books. We don't have time for that. Most of us will be dead before we get that far. Many of us. So, we have to study what is called santuti. We have to be content. We have to study what is just enough. Enough for us to practice. So studying through contentment means being content with just enough. If we look at the Buddha's teaching, we can think, how can we practice just the core of Buddhism? So again, I tell you, I'm just going to tell you which way to go, but I don't want you to believe me. At the very least, you should believe, if you're going to believe anyone, believe the Buddha. And so we can think to what did the Buddha say? And does anyone know the last words of the Buddha? Louder, I can't hear. No, those were some of his first words. Vaya dhamma sankara appamadena sampadita. Appamadena sampadita. Just that is enough. Don't worry about the vaya dhamma sankara. That's actually pariyati. It's quite important. But for now, let's focus on appamadena sampadita. Because that's an injunction. He's telling you what to do. The last thing he said, was an injunction, was an instruction. Appamadena, with vigilance, heedfulness. Sampadita, fill yourselves with vigilance, or come to fulfillment, or perfect yourself through vigilance. Practice appamadena is what he was saying. Practice appamada is what he was saying. Now, I have a problem with Sinhalese people and the word pramadaya, because apparently pramadaya means procrastination, which doesn't hit the heart of the word pramada. If you're pramadaya, it means you're late for things, right? Or you procrastinate, which isn't nearly strong enough. Pramada means like drunkenness, or indolence, or carelessness. Pramada is carelessness. There's a really good translation. It's carelessness, where you don't take heed of anything. When you're driving, you drive carelessly, recklessly. This is pamada. So the Buddha taught us to be careful, which is appamada. And this is clearly recognized as the core of the Buddha's teaching. The commentary says, Sakalampi hite pitakang buddhavachanang aharitva katiyamanang appamada padameva uttarati. All of the Buddha's te pitaka, the three pitakas, can, when condensed down, comes out to only one thing, and that's the appamada pada, the path of appamada, the path of carefulness, the path that leads us to be careful. So if we're going to study the Buddha's teaching, if we want to get the core, we need to be vigilant, constantly alert, aware right now. My job here is to bring you to the now, to ask you, what are you doing right now? And to help you know what you're doing, what is happening right here and now. What does it feel like to have the cool breeze on your skin, the sound of the wind, the sound of the cars and the birds, the feeling of that bottle of water in your hands? What does it feel like? How do you feel right now? You don't have to answer, but you have to know. How do you feel right now? How does your body feel? Can you feel the seat that you're sitting on? Once we start to know this, this is being vigilant, because then nothing can get by you. Maybe you feel bored, or you feel confused, or maybe some negative emotion arises in you. It can't get by you, because you're here, you're ready for it. You're guarding your door, the doors. Maybe you want something, you haven't eaten breakfast, so you're hungry and you're thinking about cookies or pizza or cheesecake. It can't get by you if you're appramadya, if you're vigilant. So this is where patipatti comes in. Patipatti means the practice. So I'd like to maybe offer you, everyone, some practice this morning. If you've never practiced, then here's your chance. If you have practiced, well, you can practice as you like, or you can practice as I teach, either way, as long as it's something in line with the Buddha's teaching. So, everybody, Now is the time where we practice, we go inside, or we come here where we are, back to ourselves, stop thinking about all the other things in other places and other times. Close your eyes, sit comfortably, and let's begin to study ourselves. We've gotten so far as to understand that the core of the Buddha's teaching is appamada, but we still don't understand how we put into practice this teaching. So we have to look further and see, how did the Buddha explain the word appamada? He explained it in a couple of different ways, but the most concise way is when he said, satya avipavasa appamado ti vuccati. When someone is never without mindfulness, sati, siya, no? Never without sati, appamado ti vuccati. This is called appamada. This is called carefulness. When one is always never without mindfulness, then that person is considered to be careful. So we can see actually that the Buddha equated sati and appamada. Now sati is something that most of us who study the Buddha's teaching are quite familiar with. The most common expression of sati that the Buddha gave was in the Satipatthana Sutta and the Satipatthana teachings. Satipatthana means the place or the means of establishing sati. And there are four ways to establish sati. So this is what I'm going to try to give you this morning. The four satipatthana are kaya, vedana, citta, dhamma. Have everyone repeat this after me. Kaya, vedana, citta, dhamma. Kaya, vedana, citta, dhamma. Kaya, vedana, citta, dhamma. Okay, that's the Pali. Some of you might be thinking, well, what use is it to memorize words I don't understand? You shouldn't think like that. Even animals in the Buddha's time who memorized the Buddha's teaching, were able to gain great wholesomeness that protected them. There's a story of a parrot or a canary that came to stay with the bhikkhunis. And they taught it to say atti, atti, which means bones, atti, atti. And it memorized this, and it gained such power that it was, when it was about to be picked up by an eagle, it blurted out "Atti," and just the power of its meditation, its focus on the word, was enough to scare the eagle off. There's a power in words, and especially here we have the core of the Buddha's teaching. You all have just memorized the core of Buddhism, the most essential Buddhist practice there is. So even this, without knowing what it is, without knowing what it means, is a great thing. So now we're going to get in even further to know, even better, to know what it actually means. Kaya refers to the body. Kaya, vedana, citta, dhamma. Kaya refers to the physical body from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. So we'll be sitting here, and the Buddha said, Nisinowa nisinomhiti pajanati. When sitting, one knows I am sitting. Knows clearly, but janati, knows completely and fully. So they become mindful of the fact that I am sitting. And this is how sati works. You remind yourself. The word sati means to remind yourself or to remember yourself, to remember the present moment. And so in our practice, we just remind ourselves sitting. Just say to yourself in your mind, when you know that you're sitting, say to yourself, sitting. And you can repeat it like a mantra. Sitting, sitting, sitting. And that's enough to keep your mind pure and clear and in the present moment, at least for a short while. So if you try that now, you should feel what I mean. You'll actually know that you're sitting, which is not a common state. Most of us, as soon as we know we're sitting, we're immediately off thinking about how we're sitting or how we'd rather be standing or walking or somewhere else or how much pain we have in our backs or our legs or so on. Our minds are not steady, are not objective. And so we're cultivating impartiality, objectivity, open-mindedness, so we can just experience the state of sitting without judgment. This is how we begin. There's nothing special about sitting, but it's a good place to start. Another good one is the physical response to our breath. So when the breath comes into the body, your chest or your stomach will rise. And that's another movement in the body, another aspect of the body. Gaya. So we teach people that when your chest or your stomach rises, you should just say to yourself, rising. And when it falls, falling. Rising. Falling. And this will keep your mind objective. Keep you from getting bored or distracted or attached or averse to anything. Keep your mind neutral. You can be mindful of movements in the body when you walk, or in the afternoon maybe I'll show you how to do it while you're walking. But any acknowledgement of the body, that's Gaya, the first one. The second one, vedana, is our feelings. And by feelings here we mean sensations. Whether it be painful sensations, pleasant sensations, or neutral sensations, physical or mental. And likewise, we're going to try to create clarity of mind and objectivity of mind, and keep our minds clean of any kind of liking or disliking. Because feelings or sensations are a prime cause, as the Buddha said, of defilement, of unwholesomeness, of the things that cause us suffering. The Buddha said, vedana paccaya tanha. Tanha comes from vedana. Tanha, which is craving, which leads to clinging, which leads to suffering. So if we can stop ourselves from clinging and be flexible and free and objective, then we can stop ourselves from falling into suffering when we don't get what we want or when our expectations are not met. To do this, again, we just remind ourselves it's only a feeling. So you can say to yourself, feeling, feeling. Or even better, you can, when you have pain, focus on the pain and say to yourself, pain, pain, pain. Just actually meditating on the pain to keep yourself objective, not trying to make the pain go away, not by any means. But to try to keep your mind free from the mental pain, the disliking of it, because pain isn't really a problem. The problem is the fact that we don't like it. We're averse to the pain and we get upset about it. And that upset is what makes us suffer. If you can just say to yourself, pain, 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 your mind will be clear and objective about the experience. If you feel happy, the same thing, because happiness is what leads us to addiction. What leads us to cling and to expect and to chase after the objects of our desire. So when we feel happy, we should not be afraid of being happy, but we should try to keep a clear mind while we are happy. So to do this, we say to ourselves, happy, happy. Just clearly aware this is happiness, so that we don't get the wrong idea and think it's something to cling to, that it's somehow permanent or lasting or under our control, that we can keep it forever. If you feel calm, then the same thing goes. You should say to yourself, calm, calm, calm. Because otherwise the mind will cling to it as well and be upset when it's gone. The third one, citta, refers to the mind. Now, the mind is of many types, and thoughts in the mind are of many sorts. There's thoughts about the past, both good and bad, thoughts about the future, good and bad, thoughts about the present, again, both good and bad. But whatever kind of thoughts they are, past, future, present, good, bad, in the end, it's all just thought. And that's really the answer to so many of our problems. We over-intellectualize our experience and we turn it into something that it's not. And we don't realize that all of the problems that we're creating are all just in our thoughts. And if we can reduce it back to the ultimate reality of just thought, then we can be free from so much of our worry and stress and suffering. So to do this, we just remind ourselves, thinking, thinking. As with the others, just reminding ourselves of what's really going on, what's really happening. Thinking, thinking. It's all just thought, whether it's past or future, whatever. And if you do this, you'll find your mind is clear and the thought disappears and you don't chase after it and spend all your time worrying and fretting or daydreaming and fantasizing. You find you're much more in tune with reality. An angel once came and asked the Buddha how it was that his students all were able to keep their health, even though they only ate one meal a day. And the Buddha said, "For the past they do not mourn, nor for the future weep. They take the present as it comes, and thus their good health keep." That's the English rhymed translation. Pining for a forgotten past, for a long gone past, or certain uncertain future need, dries a young man's vigor up as when you cut a fresh green reed. So just as when you cut grass, it becomes disconnected with the earth, disconnected with the source of nutriment. So too, when you cut the mind off from the present moment, from reality, it loses all of its vigor as well. It loses all of its life. So the Buddha said, a person who is not mindful person who is up, who is pamada. Ye pamatta yatha matta. Those who are negligent, who are careless, who are not in tune with reality, are as if already dead. So here we have a practice that the Buddha taught to keep us in tune with reality. And this is the third part of it, which is the mind. The fourth one, Dhamma. Dhamma, plural, refers to the things that protect one during one's practice, or the things that lead one to become enlightened. Those teachings that keep one from falling into unwholesomeness, falling into difficulty, or falling into suffering. And the first of these teachings is on the five hindrances, because the five niwarana, or hindrances, are five things that prevent one from becoming free from suffering, prevent one from progressing on the path, inhibit one's success in life, prevent one from being happy and finding peace. So these are the first step in the in our progress on the path. And they're the first most important thing we apply the teachings, the meditation teachings to. And this is in order to gain pativeda. Pativeda means the results of the practice, the realization. It's the third part of the Dhamma. So we have pariyatti is the study, patipatti is the practice, and pativeda is the realization. So patipatti is what I've explained to you so far and what I'm about to explain to you now, but pativeda is the results that come from it. As you begin to practice, you'll find, in the beginning, you'll find yourself gaining understanding about yourself. But then there are things that will get in your way and stop you from progressing, stop you from gaining tranquility, stop you from gaining insight and wisdom. And so we have to deal with these as well. Many of you know them as kama, chanda, vyapada, and so on. But those words are not much use to us, so we have to use words that are simple and easy to use and easy to remember. So I'm going to have everyone repeat after me again so you can remember these five. Again, to recap, we have the four satipatthana, kaya, which means body, vedana, which means the feelings, citta, which means the mind, and dhamma, which means all the teachings of the Buddha that help us along the path. So the first one of the dhammas that helps us is the teaching on the hindrances and how to overcome them. And these five hindrances are, and please repeat after me, liking, disliking, drowsiness, distraction, doubt. Liking, disliking, drowsiness, distraction, doubt. Now you say it. Drowsiness, distraction, doubt. Okay. So all of these things are, these are simple names for the things that will obstruct our progress and keep us from finding peace and happiness, and keep us chasing after or running away from things. So to become objective and to find our center, to come back to the present moment, we have to do away with all of these. So again, the means of doing away with them is to become objective about them, to stop the chain of causation, stopping ourselves from perpetuating them. So if you like something or you want something, rather than just chasing after it, try to remind yourself, hey, it's just an emotion. When you like, say, liking. Just get it clear in your mind as to what it is and keep yourself from going the next step and using it to as a reason, as an excuse to chase after things. Wanting. If you have disliking, say to yourself, disliking, and you find you don't need to run away from what you don't like, or chase it away, or destroy it, or hurt people, or yourself. If you feel bored, or frustrated, or sad, or afraid, same thing, you can say bored, sad, afraid. Depressed, and so on. If you feel tired or drowsy, you can say to yourself, tired, or drowsy. If you feel distracted or worried, you can say distracted, worried. If you have doubt or confusion, say to yourself, doubting, or confused. And when there's nothing else, just come back again to the body. Come back to the stomach. Say to yourself, rising, falling. Or come back to the sitting posture and say to yourself, sitting. This is basic meditation teaching. This is really all you need to get started on the path to understand yourself. The Dhamma of the Buddha is not something you need to find in books. It's something that you really have to find inside yourself. Books will only give you pariyatti. Books cannot give you patipatti or pativeda. That Dhamma you have to find for yourself by practicing the teachings. By coming back here to the present moment and studying your own heart, and your own mind, your own body and your own mind. And the four satipatthana, this is the way that the Buddha taught us, that he called the ekayana magga, the one path or the one-way path or the straight path that leads us to understanding, leads us to get on the right path, and leads us to freedom from suffering. So as you put this into practice, you'll find yourself coming to understand yourself better, to understand your own mind and the world around you, in a whole new way, in a way that allows you to free yourself from stress and worry and desire and aversion. It helps you understand why we keep the precepts. Why is it wrong to kill? Why certain things are wrong to do? You come to understand how they affect the mind and how unwholesome mind states lead to suffering. You come to understand karma. You come to understand anicca, dukkha, anatta. Anicca, dukkha, anatma. You come to see, to understand these for yourself without intellectualizing. This is called bhavanamaya panya. Wisdom that comes from mental development. From seeing for yourself. As you do this, your mind will begin to quiet down. As you see clearly, your mind will become quiet. And when your mind becomes quiet, all sorts of neat things will begin to arise. Many people, when they sit in meditation for some time, they begin to see things. Maybe you'll see a Buddha image, or you'll see a scene of nature, or something that you find appealing. Maybe you'll see bright lights, or colors, or pictures, or whatever. These sorts of things are, you could call, positive byproducts of the practice. They're nice and pleasant, but they can also be quite distracting on the path. And so the next set of teachings the Buddha gave was in regards to the senses. If you see something, as the Buddha said, ditte dittamattang bhavissati, let what you see just be seeing. So be careful not to get caught up in it. thinking it's something special or meaningful or important, or that this is the path to become free from suffering. It's not. It's a byproduct. And so if you see anything when you meditate, you should just remind yourself, seeing, 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 so that you don't get attached or afraid or confused by it. So that your mind is clear and balanced and non-judgmental about it. When you hear something, the same thing, sutte suttamatang bhavisati. When you hear, let it just be hearing. So just say to yourself, hearing, hearing. And let it go. That's the basis of the meditation practice. And that is what leads you to Pativeda. This I can't explain to you. Pativeda is something you have to realize for yourself. I can't teach you how to attain Pativeda. That only comes through your practice. Once you come to see who you are and how your mind works, then will come the realization by itself. You will understand yourself, understand cause and effect, understand the nature of reality, understand the Four Noble Truths. What is suffering? What is the cause of suffering? And you will let go of those things that cause you suffering so that you don't suffer anymore. So this is what I would like to teach this morning, and I'd like to spend maybe the next 15 minutes, we can just do silent meditation. If anyone needs to go to the washroom, maybe 10 minutes. We'll do meditation for 10 minutes and then I'll let you go. So you can just sit here with me, and when the timer goes off, then we'll finish up. Maybe timer goes, then we'll send metta and finish.